Financial Survival Network, helping you to survive and thrive in the new economy. Get our complimentary newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. This is the Financial Survival Network.
You are listening to the financialsurvivalnetwork.com. I'm Kerry Lutz on 1230 WBZT. It's time once again for the Major Market Monthly Review with Mickey Fulp, and he's here with us now. Mickey, how are you?
I'm doing well, Kerry. I'm in Vancouver. It's still raining, and we're still dreaming of sunshine to a play on a very interesting Jimi Hendrix song.
Well, it rained here in Florida literally for the entire month of June. Last month was a little better. It's pouring here. If you hear noises in the background, it's from the lightning and thunder that's going on right now. But certainly the stock markets, there was no lightning and thunder going on there. They did quite nicely last month. They picked up the slack from the month before, didn't they?
Well, that they did, and we are once again pushing all-time records. Dow was up 4%, closed the month at an even 15,500. S&P up 5% in record territory. The NASDAQ was one of the big winners, up almost 7%. You know, and Kerry, it's only probably about, 20% off its all-time bubble high of over 4,000 in year 2000, if memory serves. The small cap markets are rolling right along. The Russell Index has exceeded 1,000 for the first time this month, up 7%, closed at 1,045. Lagging behind, once again, are the indices that are dependent on hard commodities, and that would be natural resource leverage Toronto Stock Exchange. It was up 3%. The Venture Index in the middle of the summer doldrums was up 4%. Now I have to say we're in the middle of the summer doldrums, but maybe we could look at a bottom here. It closed at over 900. That's still way low, but perhaps we're looking at a bottom. The next couple of months will tell on that as we work our way through month of August and then past Labor Day. The MSCI, the Emerging Markets Index that we use, was up about 1% after a big drop last month, but I think that still has to do with weak data coming out of China.
Yeah, well, you know about the Toronto Venture, every dog has its day, as they say, right?
Well, it's this dog has not reached its day yet, so
it
we're
will.
Just hoping that there are better things to come. But, you know, we're still at, with the exception of a spike down in the global economic crisis late 2008, early 2009, we are still at record low levels since the history of this exchange, which started in 2001.
Yeah. What do you think's driving these markets? There's just no place else to get yield because interest rates are so low, and that historically has driven stock market returns because the Federal Reserve central banks would cut rates, which would cut yields on debt instruments, which would drive money into stock markets. And, you know, in a way, it's a liquidity-driven cycle. It's effectively the business cycle as we know it. And money flows into the markets, and it's also an inflation play, I guess, when you get down to it at its heart,
well,
right?
Yeah, and your points are well taken, and I agree wholeheartedly. And we need only to look at the hyperinflation that occurred in Zimbabwe 3 or 4 years ago. The only thing that performed during that period of time was their stock market, and it actually outperformed the inflation of their dollars or their currency, whatever they called it at the time. But certainly the zero interest rate policy, the idea that this money stimulus has no end in sight, and you know, the Fed needs to build a bubble, and in my opinion, the stock market is the next bubble. At some point, we certainly will become way overdue for a correction, and I would actually submit that that's probably now, but you know, as we all know, corrections generally don't come when they're called for, and at some point there'll be some minor catalyst probably that will set the markets in a tither, and they will correct.
Hey, and there's a reason right now where they can't really allow the correction to occur, and that is the coronation of the next Fed chairman. And if there's one thing that's important in any business, in any restaurant, any TV show, you name it, it's continuity. And right now the continuity is crucial, because the next Fed chairman, whether it's Janet Yellen, who I personally think it's going to be, or Larry Summers, whoever it is,
yikes,
whoever it may be, it doesn't matter who it is when you get down to it, really, Mickey. The continuity needs to be in place. This is the last time. This is the worst time that to start out a new program of tapering or ending QE, whatever you want to call it. They're not going to do it now and give this person a headache the first day on the job. It just ain't going to happen here. I don't care what anyone says. They want to pave the way for this person. And the easiest way to do that is keep banging out those fiat currency units in record numbers and let that person get their feet under the desk before the next disaster takes place, which it inevitably will. You and I both know it. And, you know, just give that person an easy transition right now and let Bernanke fade out, fade into the limelight. You know, old Fed chairmen never die. They just retire to their villas in the Riviera or wherever it might be. And that's what's going on here. Let's face it. They're not going to do anything now to upset the apple cart, right?
Well, I will not disagree with you in that opinion.
And then we go to the precious metals markets. So sometimes the dog gets so beat up, goes so low that, you know, or the cat, whatever, can only go one way, and that's up, right?
Well, they did have impressive rebounds. I don't know if I certainly don't think the bear market in the precious metals is over, because if you look at a chart, we keep establishing lower lows and lower highs. So that tells you the trend right there, and the trend is your friend. That said, gold was up 10% of the month. Silver lagged behind at 6%. Platinum at 9% up, and palladium, the big winner after a brutal June, regained its former value. So it was up 14% after being down 14% in June. More interesting to me, other than the actual values of these metals right now, would be the ratios. And the gold-silver ratio hit almost 67 a couple of days before the end of the month. It's at 66 when the month ended. And Kerry, that is a three-year high, or nearly a three-year high, last achieved in mid-August of 2010. So at some point, there will be a buy signal for silver. I am probably looking at a higher ratio before I would go in and buy silver over gold, but you know, maybe a target of I don't know, pick 75 right now might be a very interesting target for a gold-silver ratio. I'm not going to say it's going to get there, but it did get to 84 in the global financial crisis of I think that ratio occurred in October, November of 2008. Platinum to gold ratio is looks like it's going to maintain over one. It's at 1.1 right now. And the anomaly again is the platinum palladium ratio, still under two. That's unusual in the grand scheme of things, but with the demand for automobiles and therefore the demand for palladium, Maybe we have a new paradigm in that ratio.
Yeah, perhaps, perhaps. And then we go over to Dr. Copper, and what's he telling us?
Well, he's telling us that China is still slow, in slow-mo right now with the growth set at 7 to 7.5%. Most of the world would be turning cartwheels with that sort of growth, but in the perceived grand scheme of things, especially on Wall Street, that's bad. So copper was up 2% of the month, but it's in its lower end of what I consider its range for this year, say $3 to $3.50. It closed at $3.11. So some high-cost producers may come off at this sort of price. Certainly, projects will be deferred at this price of copper, but I would have to say, if you can't make money at $3.10 copper, then you probably ought to get out of the copper business.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And then we're off to energy. Another strong performance for everything but Earl Powell natural gas here.
Yeah, so WTI was up 7% over the month. It continues to make inroads on the arbitrage with Brent. Closed at $1.03. Brent closed at $1.07.
They really,
so that ratio is basically one now, or a little bit more than one. And Henry Hub gas was down 6% of the month, closed at less than $3.50, which is a bit surprising because this is usually a summer air conditioning season, and so we generally see stronger demand for natural gas. But it was down. So in the and the WTI to Henry Hub ratio hit a 10-month high at 30 again. So so it's going the opposite direction as we thought it would.
Yep. But interesting there. But we're still over that $3 number, and if you remember, back in was it July of last year, we're still above that. It was $3.22, and it was back in the $2 range all through 2012. Was under $3, so it did come back pretty strongly last year. We'll see what happens for the rest of 13 and 14. My guess is it's going to find some strength again because there's all sorts of substitutions. I mean, I'm seeing garbage trucks, Mickey, say powered by natural gas. I'm seeing buses all over the place saying it. Next thing I know, I'm going to be seeing motor scooters saying it. You know, it seems like there is a transition taking place in commercial vehicles from diesel to natural gas, albeit slowly, but it's consistent now. And you look at that ratio, and it's not hard to understand why.
Well, yeah, but I would still submit that nobody's making money at $3.50 natural gas. So wells are shut in. We still have a glut of gas, and we've talked ad infinitum about that, or perhaps ad nauseum. But until we get some infrastructure set up, this is going to be a very, very slow process.
Yeah, you're right, it will. And the only thing that's keeping the natural gas industry alive is the wet gas, obviously. We talked about that as well.
Yes.
And on to our currencies, where, hey, well, take it away. Talk about the currencies.
Well, I don't know what to say. Sometimes I wonder why we continue to do this. But the dollar index was down 2% of the month, and the euro was up 2% of
what
the
a
month.
Shock.
The ennui is certainly stupefying, I would say. What a shock. Nothing else to say. I'm bored with it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the interest rates, which we're going to start covering shortly, kind of stabilized a bit. We don't have the monthly chart, but just to, you know, the 10-year is at 2.6%, which is roughly where it was the end of last month. And that's something we're going to have to start paying a little more attention to, because the volatility on the 10-year is picking up. You know, it broke over 2.6% this month, but last month rather, but it settled back down, went down to, you know, the low 2.5%. But we have to start watching that, because, you know, everybody's watching the Fed now. We're back to that old paradigm, Mickey, where all eyes watch the Fed, which is why my hypothesis that because the new Fed chairman's coming in, they're not going to do anything major. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but till the new dupe, I mean, till the new chairman gets picked, you know, it's not a job I would want. I don't know how you sleep at night being in that position, because remember 08-09, where basically the whole world almost ended? You know, how far are we away from that really happening again, Mickey? I mean, it's only a few things.
A few more $1 trillion in debt, Kerry. So.
Trillion here, a trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real fiat currency, right?
Yeah, well, whatever.
Hey, and you had one more thing you wanted to discuss, right?
Well, yeah, and so we kind of skipped over it, but that's uranium. And it was the big story of the month, with a staggering 11% loss, like, once again. So it blew past the $40 base that it has had for some period of time here. And it's basically broken down. Now, you can account for about three reasons for this demise in the spot price. Usual summertime weakness. There just aren't ever a lot of uranium deals done in the summertime. The DOE, in all its wisdom, came in and upped the ante for selling surplus uranium into the market. Now they've set the number of pounds at 7 million a year. The agreement they had before, which they commonly violated, was 5 million pounds a year. They have a mandate not to upset the U.S. domestic uranium market, but they obviously have done that. And then likely we have had Japanese selling inventory because they still have 48 of 50 reactors offline. This is an opaque market, but they're losing a significant amount of money every year, every day, and by going to liquefied natural gas. So the utilities have to recoup this additional money that they're paying for liquefied natural gas, and the thought is that they're selling uranium inventories. That said, many analysts have all of a sudden become contrarians, and they're bullish on uranium stocks. You can argue that there has been a basing in some of the big ones, uranium stocks. There has been a rally in the U.S. ISR producers and developers, with lots of volume traded. So, and with all contrarian plays, patience is the word. So maybe we're seeing this one come around. Speaking of contrarianism, if you watch sports on TV, we've been bombarded over the last months with this a certain investment house, which will remain unnamed. And the line is, join the 7 million investors who think like you do. And they used to have the audacity to join the 7, the nerve, the belief, hold on to the idea that you need to join the 7 million investors who think like you do. Well, yep, and following that herd of sheeple is the best way I know to lose money.
Right. So give out your websites again besides mercenarygeologist.com.
Mercenarygeologist.fm is our 24/7 streaming radio station, and you can join the 31,000 plus followers at Mercenary Geo.
Excellent. And hey, till next month, you be well. We'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Carrie.